Welcome back to another edition of the MMA After Hour. Today we're being joined by the newest member of the UFC welterweight division. His name is Ciar Bahadurzada, and he meets Paulo Thiago at UFC Sweden, which takes place April 14th, live on Fuel TV right here in the United States. Ciar, first and foremost, thank you very much for the time. Congratulations on finally getting to the UFC. I know it's been a very long road for you. Has it sunk in yet that you're now a part of the UFC, or do you think that will only happen once you finally enter the octagon?
Thanks very much for having me, Ariel. And it's an honor to fight in the UFC finally. And after a long time of hard work, finally my hard work paid off, and I got signed by the UFC, and I'm very excited for my April 14th fight.
You were supposed to make your debut in Brazil in January. You were supposed to fight Eric Silva. That was a great fight, or that would have been a great fight, but you injured your hand. Can you explain what exactly happened and how your hand is feeling right now?
Yeah, I was sparring a few weeks before the fight, and I broke my hand in the last 10 to 20 seconds of sparring. It was a very unfortunate thing, and I was really excited to fight in Brazil. Especially fighting in Rio and fight the crowd favorite. I'm always excited when I fight people who are in their home in a crowd, public in the crowd, home crowd. And I just love to fight those people, be the underdog. So and Eric Silva was also a good fighter. Stylistically, we matched up well. So I was excited for that fight, and unfortunately, I broke my right hand. But I got a sport cast, which means when I had the cast on my hand, I could jog, I could keep up my conditioning, I could kick or knee, but I couldn't train with my right hand. So that was a little bit terrible. It took a few weeks, but after 6 weeks, the cast was off and I could use my right hand again. Then my right hand is now 100%.
And considering all that you had been through over the last year or so, you know, with Strikeforce and finally getting into the UFC, how devastating was it? I mean, did you go through a sort of period of, you know, depression? Like, can you finally make your UFC debut, or were you able to sort of, you know, look past the negative and look ahead to the positives?
If you believe in certain things and you work hard and you're determined, things will happen, you know, and I was determined. I knew I would fight one day. I would fight in a big league in the UFC, and I will fight my way over there. So things worked out well, and right now I'm in the UFC, and I'm honored to be in the UFC, and I'm excited to fight for the UFC.
Which matchup do you like better, you against Paulo Thiago or the original one against Eric Silva?
No disrespect to Eric Silva, but I see Paulo Thiago as a much more complete and well-rounded fighter. And also, I think mentally tougher than Eric Silva. So I think my match right now with Paulo Thiago is a much better fight, and because he's a tough guy, mentally tough guy, and I hope to be tough enough to stand with him and give the UFC and the fans a great fight.
Obviously, you're known for your striking. Thiago has, he's evolved as a striker since he came into the UFC. He was very stiff on his feet. But I'm wondering, someone like yourself, right now, anyone can make the argument that you're one of the best strikers in the welterweight division before even fighting, just given your background. What do you think of his striking?
He is heavy-handed, as we all know. And so let me tell you this, except Jake Shields, I think everybody is heavy-handed in UFC and in the welterweight division, especially. Only Jake Shields is the only exception that he can't really punch hard. But the rest of the guys, they're all well-rounded, and they're all good strikers. But I think my striking age and my experience in striking is much more than Thiago's, and his grappling is much more better than mine, I think. So it's stylistically also a great matchup, and to see who imposes his game plan and his will on the other opponent, I think that will be the winner, and we'll see who does that better on April 14th.
So that said, is it safe to assume that you want to keep this fight standing?
Well, of course, it's not a rocket science. I mean, I always wanted to keep my fight standing, whoever it is. So this fight won't be different.
You mentioned that he's mentally tough. Is that because of his other job as a BOPE officer in Brazil?
Yeah, of course, and that's it's going to be a great fight, because how many chances do you get to crack a cop inside a cage? So it's a great chance. I'll have a good fight with him.
Okay, so let's talk about your road to the UFC. You made a lot of headlines last year with your little, your feud with Scott Coker. You never ended up fighting for Strikeforce, even though it seemed as though you did have some kind of contract with them. Why didn't you ever get that chance to fight for Strikeforce, and how did you get out of that contract and be able to sign with the UFC?
I appreciate your concern for asking that about Strikeforce, but Strikeforce is the past. All the things that happened, I want to forget. I have forgotten those things. And right now, today, I'm working really hard, and my future is looking bright. So I'm looking in the future. I forget about Strikeforce. Right now, I'm in the UFC. If I fought in the UFC, I would have fought in the undercard. But right now, I'm fighting in the UFC main card. So I really worked hard, and fought my last three fights at the United Glory really hard, and I think I fought my way to the UFC in the main card. And right now I'm really happy to be fighting Paulo Thiago, which is a really good opponent. And from there, I'm very thankful for UFC for giving me this chance, and I'll take it from there.
Okay, one last thing on Strikeforce, though. Did you or were you able to clear the air, at least with Scott Coker? You called him some pretty strong words. I mean, are there still some hard feelings there?
There are some things. I don't have any hard feeling against anybody right now, because when it happened, I forgot. So right now, I don't pull the past with me. I don't have that kind of mentality to pull my past over on my back all the time. So I left it in the past. And right now I'm in the present, and I'm looking forward to my fight in the UFC. And I don't have any hard feelings against anybody. But sometimes you get disrespected by certain people, and some people lie to you, some people betray you. And in my culture, betrayal is the worst thing you can do to a person. And when I felt really betrayed and mistreated. So that's why I think I got emotional. But all fighters are emotional. Fighters are emotional people. We fight because we're so emotional, and we put out our heart out there in the cage, and that's what makes some fighters special, because of the emotions, because they fight with emotion, and they fight hard. So that's why fighters are a little bit more emotional than regular people, and I think that's what makes fighters special.
You were a longtime member of the Golden Glory team, but you recently split from them. When did that happen?
It happened, I think, two and a half months ago.
So had you fought at UFC 142, you would have gone into that fight as a Golden Glory member, right? This happened between January mm-hmm. and now. Why did you leave the camp?
I don't want to go into details in that, but I had some trust issues, and that's why I decided to leave Golden Glory.
How long were you there for?
In Golden Glory?
Yeah.
5 years.
So when did you start to feel that there were trust issues?
It was a long time coming, and all of a sudden, sometimes it's the last drop, and I was like, you know what, I'm done.
So is it hard at all, or was it at all hard to sort of gather a new camp?
Of course it's hard. I made them friends. We were friends. And my trainer, Martin Dion, with who I trained all my life from day one. And I split with him too, because he is Golden Glory. He didn't split from Golden Glory. I just wanted to train with him, even though I'm not with Golden Glory, but he chose for Golden Glory. So these things I don't know, man. I'm a little bit I still feel betrayed because of some reasons, but I'll keep it to myself.
You don't want to share them with us.
I don't like to hang out my dirty clothes.
Yes,
outside, dirty laundry outside. Yes.
But just curious about trying to gather a new team, because now you're about to fight in the biggest fight of your career, biggest stage. How difficult was it to now gather yourself a new team, and Are all these people that you surrounded yourself with, are they new, or are some of them, you know, guys that you've trained with or trained under in the past?
No, they're all guys that I trained with, and there are some new, but they're all most of the guys were guys that I always trained with. And Alex Arovin was there till a few weeks, till 2 weeks ago, and he helped me all the time. All the other guys who I trained with in the past, they were there for me and helped me. Actually, I also joined Lucien Corbin, legendary kickboxing trainer, and my striking is way better than before. And because his way of striking is also something that matches my kind of aggressive style in the cage, in the ring. And I'm very happy with my new kickboxing trainer and my way of training right now. And I'm readier than ever.
So you don't feel as though it's going to be tough being there for the first time without your, you know, not the first time, but for the first time in several years without the familiar faces of Golden Glory?
Well, no. Because I think it will have its effects, of course, but I don't think it will be that big to distract me or something.
Do you think you mentioned Overeem and of course yourself? Do you think Golden Glory is gonna sort of crumble now because all these top guys are leaving them?
I have no idea. I just hope the best for them and for myself and for Alistair Overeem.
Yeah, and this is actually going to air several days after we've recorded the interview, but do you have any take on what's going on with Alistair Overeem? Of course, it was announced yesterday that his levels of testosterone were above the legal limit in Nevada.
Yeah, I to be honest with you, I have very little knowledge about those things. And all I can say is Alistair Overeem is a friend, and as a friend, I'll always be supportive, and I'll always support him.
You are going to be, as far as I'm concerned, and correct me if I'm wrong, the first Afghani fighter to ever fight in the UFC. Is that true?
That's true.
Now, what does that mean to you as someone who's obviously been through a lot in your home country and you're very proud of your heritage? Does that mean anything extra special for you?
It is very special for me. And the fact that I want to represent Afghanistan, that I'm proud of my heritage so much, is because nobody did anything good for Afghanistan. I mean, everybody who is from the government to the small person over there, everybody thinks about his pockets, put money in the pocket. You know what I mean? Nobody thinks about Afghanistan itself. I want to be the first person, who says, you know what? I will do for my country. I don't expect anything in return, like JF Kennedy said. I will do for my country, but I will not expect anything in return. That's what I'm doing right now for Afghanistan. I want to put Afghanistan in a positive light, and hopefully other athletes will follow.
Is the media or the fan base over there, I don't know if MMA is popular over there, you tell me, but are they aware that, you know, one of their most famous athletes is about to fight in the UFC?
Well, the thing is that Afghanistan is not that much developed. I think I'm 50 years ahead in time in Afghanistan right now. I think, but I'm not seeing that as now or tomorrow. If not now, in 50 years, they will find out that they had somebody who fought at the highest level of mixed martial arts and who represented Afghanistan and who had great intentions for Afghanistan. I think the things that I do right now, it will never last. It will never go waste. It will always be there. I will write history for Afghanistan. I will go to the history for Afghanistan, and I'm pretty sure that my Afghans will always remember me, and this will not be something wasted.
When was the last time that you were there?
A few years ago. Two years ago, I think.
And what's, if you're able to, I know it's been a while, but what's the sort of life like there? Is it getting better? Do you get the sense that it's getting better, or is it still very hard?
It's still very hard. It's really dangerous living out there. If somebody finds out you have $100 in your pocket and you're somewhere, they'll just stab you for the $100. But the thing is that killing people in Afghanistan is like a joke. I mean, people out here doesn't kill birds that easily, that other people kill people in Afghanistan easily. So it's a tough situation out there, and hopefully it will get better in the near future, but it's really tough out there.
Have you heard of the story about the 17-year-old amateur boxer? I may be mispronouncing her name, but I believe it's Sadaf Rahimi, who's trying to make it to the Olympics from Afghanistan?
Yes, yes.
Do you know her?
I don't know her personally, but she's. I wish her all the best, and I hope she does great at the Olympics. So I think I'll be there to support her. I'll be in London. We'll go there to support her.
For those that don't know CR, how difficult is it for a woman living in Afghanistan to compete in sports?
Well, it's very difficult. It's really, really difficult because in Afghanistan, there's still a different culture. And people think different, and things are different in Afghanistan. Especially for a woman to go do fight sports and contact sports, it's really tough. And that's why I respect that woman, Sadaf, who is going for Olympics. And I'm really looking forward to see her fight.
Obviously, you don't compete in the same sport, but considering your striking background, will you try to reach out to her to help her to see if she needs any help? Or is that not really something that you're interested or able to do?
If I could help her, I would help her with all pleasure. So after my fight, I think I will contact Afghanistan. I know a lot of people there. Mm-hmm. And I'll get in contact with her and see what she wants. At least I will help her with other things if she needs, with some whatever she needs. So I'll be supportive, and I'll help her with all my power.
You left Afghanistan in 1999. Why did your family decide to leave?
There were some political issues. My father had some political issues with Taliban back then. That's why my father decided to leave Afghanistan, because it wasn't safe anymore for us.
And I know you've talked about this a lot, so I won't harp on it very much, but if you could just paint a picture for us, what's it like being a teenager growing up in Afghanistan during that period of time? How traumatic and difficult was it on a daily basis?
During my period of time or during now?
No.
My period of time?
Yeah. Is there anything that you could sort of share with us in terms of like what you saw?
Let me tell you a short story. When I was with my older brother and my father, we were walking, and all of a sudden, the war started. And they were firing from the mountain to the ground, and from the ground they were firing back or to the mountain to hit each other. And we were caught in the middle. And they were firing on everybody downstairs. So me, my father, and my brother, I think I was 4 years old, 4 or 5 years old. We were running, and I remember, like, stepping over people's body, like stepping over people's hands, over faces, over chest, body, blood. People were dying, and they were on the street, and body parts on the street. I remember as a 4 or 5 years old kid walking over people's body. And that's just one of the stories that I share with you. I've seen pretty messed up stuff in Afghanistan, and those are the things that I think I'll carry with me my entire life. And I don't think those things will ever get out of me. But that's why those things also changed me to the person that I am today, and that gives me a lot of willpower and determination. And I'll go for my if I want something, I go for it.
Do you think that's why, you know, because you experienced that at a young age, that's why you went into combat sports?
I don't know if it's that, but to be honest with you, MMA, the way when you stand in the ring or in the cage, when you fight, you don't know what's going to happen. I think that's similar kind of excitement that I was used to in Afghanistan when I was living from day to day. Like 10 minutes, there was like a couple hundred feet further, there was a bomb or something or a rocket. And 5 minutes later, we were back outside playing with my friends. And there was another one a little bit further, but we didn't care. So it was a constant excitement that I was used to. And when I came to Holland, life was boring for me. And soon I was really bored, and so bored that I thought, okay, I'm going back to Afghanistan. This is not life for me. I can't do anything here. And then I got familiar with MMA, and MMA actually changed my life. It saved me. And MMA actually also helped me to get a bachelor's degree in economics. It also kept my life and balanced and stabilized me to study hard. So I also studied here hard in university in Holland, and I also trained on the site. But in 2009, I finished my studies, and since 2009, I haven't lost, and I've been training 100% MMA every day, day in, day out. Just MMA and nothing else. No school, no work, nothing.
And you think that's part of the reason why you haven't lost, right? That you've been able to focus on the sport 100%?
Yeah, because right now the only focus that I have is fighting, and I don't do anything on the side. And, so I think that's the reason, yes.
And just a few more questions, CR, and I appreciate the time very much before we let you go. Your nickname, and you're active on Twitter, it's twitter.com/CRTheKiller. It's a very unique nickname, The Killer. It's very bold and to the point. Considering your background, why do you choose a nickname like that, like such a strong nickname like that?
Well, I think it's not the nickname that I chose. Back in the days when I was like 4 or 5 years old, 6 maybe, I was the boss in the street as a kid. I used to run the other kids, and they had to play according to my rules. It sounds crazy, but it was like that. They had to play according to my rules. So back then, I had to fight to be that kind of boss. So I fought with bigger guys, like 8, 9 years old guys, and with two or three at the same time. But I would never back down, and I would just fight with them and beat them and make them cry or run away. But one time, my grandfather saw me that I was fighting with three guys older than me, and I beat all the three of them. And that's why my grandfather, he didn't know that I was that kind of guy. So he grabbed me and said, "I think you're a killer." And in a sense that I'm not scared of anything, and that I don't have fear in my heart. So I think that's the nickname that stayed with me. And I wanted, when I was in the U.S., Jason Mayhemmiller and Ryan Parsons, they thought, okay, let's. We think we can change your nickname to Sierra the Great. We think Sierra the Great is a better nickname for you. I said, all right. But then I fought in a United Glory, and everybody was like, no, wait. Sierra the Killer is a better nickname for you, because you're a killer in the ring. So when you fight, you have a killer instinct, and you're a killer. So I think that's why I stayed with the Killer. But it is a kind of tough nickname to have, especially for me with my Afghan background. But honestly, it has nothing to do with my background. It has everything to do with my fighting style and the way I fight.
Speaking of the United Glory tournament, you won that tournament last year. That was your last fight in May of 2011. So by the time you fight for the UFC, it will be almost 11 months since you've competed. How difficult has this past year been for you, considering this is what you do for a living and you haven't been able to do it?
Yeah, it has been really, really hard. It has been really, really hard. And that's one of the reasons that I left Golden Glory, because they just paid me a few days ago for the United Glory, the entire money. So I had a really tough time. I went through some tough times, and right now it's over, and I'm happy. I'm fighting in the UFC. I have my money, and I think my luck has changed, and I think I will go towards positivity and towards great things in the future.
And just out of curiosity, why did it take them so long to pay you? What were they saying to you when you were trying to get your money?
Well, they had some stuff that they said, and I don't wanna go to details in this one, but there were some things that they were saying and promising. But all of a sudden, at one time, I was like, okay, enough promises now.
Yeah.
So that's why things got out of hand, and we split. But right now, I'm paid. I'm happy, and looking forward to my fight.
And a couple of years ago in Abu Dhabi, UFC President Dana White said that they wanted to put on an event for troops in Afghanistan. Obviously, the climate has changed very much. But if there is a chance of ever fight, I mean, I'm guessing that would be a dream for you, right, to fight, obviously, in your home country.
It is a dream for me.
Right.
It is a dream for me. And if it's in a big stadium, I promise you a sold-out stadium.
Yeah, that would be I'm guessing that would be, like, the number one thing that you can accomplish, like on your bucket list to compete in front of your home country or close
100%.
Enough.
100%.
Yeah. 100%. And finally, CR, let's say you beat Paulo. You've been in this sport a long time. You're on a winning streak. You haven't lost since November of 2008. Where do you sort of see yourself in the welterweight division? And is there anyone you'd like to fight in order to take that next step?
Well, first of all, I have to get to Thiago, which is a very, very tough opponent. I don't look past Thiago, but I will fight whoever gets me one step closer to the title.
All right. Well, good luck, CR. I know it's been a long time coming. Very excited for you. Can't wait for this fight. It goes down April 14th in Sweden, UFC on Fuel TV number 2. And that takes place in front of the sold-out crowd at the Sony Ericsson Globe Arena in Stockholm, Sweden. Good luck, and thank you very much for the time, CR.
Thank you very much, Ariel. And I would like to thank all the fans for supporting me all the time on Twitter and on Facebook. And looking forward to show you guys some great fights in the future.